song.
I'm editing the theme song in later.
So. You know what? It's our first attempt, Henry. I think we'll give it a go.
Sure.
Anyways, welcome to the first ever Columbia Space Initiative podcast.
My name is Henry Manowski.
And I am David Tibbetts. We want this podcast to be a series of fun, informative, and unscripted conversations about space.
Which is why you're reading from a script right now.
That's exactly why.
Exposed. We should probably introduce ourselves a little bit more. I don't know if you want to...
All right, well, whereas my friend Henry is the rocket scientist of the crew, I am the rock scientist, well trained in geology and mineralogy and all that sort of stuff. I'm from Phoenix, Arizona.
There's no reaction to that one from the live studio audience? We need more enthusiasm.
I do want to point out, we do have a live studio audience sitting in today. There are five individuals.
Yay!
They are very excited to be here. Yeah. Like I said, rock scientist from Arizona. We're going to have a lot of fun on this podcast. Henry, take it away.
My name is Henry Manowski. I'm from New Jersey. I want to work for SpaceX. Super big rocket nerd. I don't know if you mentioned it, but we're both Columbia engineering students.
Yeah.
Should we just get into it?
I think we gotta get into it. Henry, what are we talking about today?
So we're gonna talk about megastructures in space, but we're gonna start with aliens.
Oh, aliens. All right, but a lot of people are wondering, is it even worth discussing aliens and alien life? Of course it is!
There's a very famous, I guess, thought experiment, is the right word, called the Fermi paradox, which was created by Enrico Fermi, one of the foremost physicists of the 20th century. He actually worked out of Columbia at one point in time, worked in Pupin. Basically, his idea was there's about 400 billion stars in our galaxy, and astronomers think that the ratio of stars to planets is about 1 to 1. So there's 400 billion planets in our galaxy about. If one in a million harbored life, I'm really bad at math.
That's 4,000 planets. 4,000 would be harboring life.
So basically, where are the aliens? I mean, we probably should have run into them by now, right?
One would assume.
Mm-hmm. But as of right now, there's no evidence of aliens.
So. None. As far as we're aware, there's no life in the universe now. We're going to pause real fast to take a question from the live studio audience. Yes, Elise?
I take issue with your math. 400 billion planets. One in a million has life.
Mm-hmm.
Would there be 4 billion. It would be 400,000, yes. I thought I was going for 4 billion.
With
life? The age of the Earth.
I can't do math.
No, if it was 400 billion, then yes, it'd be 400,000.
Yes.
But we're going to edit that out.
All right, so there should be, if we think about it, we don't really know whether it's one in a million or not. It could be one in 10 million. It could be one in 100,000. So this is sort of all estimations. But the point is that there should be a lot of life in the universe. So the paradox is, where is it? And people have come up with various different explanations. There's a very famous one called the Great Filter. Basically, it's the idea that there is some event in the lead up to intelligent life that we can communicate with, and that event prevents life from progressing.
And it could be several different events. Some of the ones I've heard is like going from a single cell organism, or even just getting a single cell organism in the first place, but mm-hmm. from one cell to several cells.
Mm-hmm. Multicellular life.
Yeah. Going from eating sulfur to eating carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm.
Developing photosynthesis is a huge step.
Or maybe it could be when intelligent life has already been developed. For example, nuclear weapons. People have said maybe all intelligent life just blows itself up, or climate change, they just ruin their planet and then they all die. So
we have another question from the live studio audience. Go ahead, Michael.
So if we take that first paradox as true, right, that there are all of these alien civilizations, the universe is always expanding, there should be at least one of those that is super intelligent beyond the confines of even our meager human imagination. Should they have already contacted us, right?
Yeah,
already
that's...
The studio audience asks that, shouldn't there be at least one that's super advanced? And that's correct. There should be at least one.
Yeah, that's...
That is what freaks us out.
Yeah. I mean, so...
Maybe they're already within us.
Oh, God.
That's a little bit too far. But sort of going off of your point, so the universe is 13.7 billion years old, and humanity has been around for about 200,000 years. Civilization has been around for like 10,000 years. So we could conceive of a civilization that's been around for a billion years. And just imagine how crazy the technology is at that scale. And that's why, leading into the next point, it is worth discussing megastructures in space, these massive objects that you could artificially put into existence that could be the size of planets on the scale of star systems.
Yeah, one of the biggest ones, biggest megastructure that has been theorized is the Dyson Sphere. Henry, you want to talk about the Dyson Sphere first?
Sure. So Freeman Dyson, super cool astronomer, in 1960 he published this paper that basically said that you could have a civilization so advanced and their energy requirements to keep existing so high that they literally encapsulate their entire star with what would essentially be solar panels, I guess, to extract all of the energy from that star. And of course, that would look super weird from the outside, right? If you could even see it, yeah.
Yeah. So there's several variants that have come across for the Dyson Spheres. I've heard things, Dyson nets, bubbles, shells, swarms. But these are all just essentially smaller versions of a Dyson Sphere. They don't cover the entire thing, but still captures enough energy. One of the most compelling ones I've ever heard, though, is that of the Dyson Ring, which was theorized in Larry Niven's a science fiction book, Ring World. I really like this one because in most cases of Dyson Spheres, you can't live on them without the possibility of having a gravity generator.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of out of the picture, at least as far as we can conceive. But the Dyson Ring is essentially, it's just a ring around the thing. It's got a width. It's not a sphere, and you can spin this ring around a star, such that the centripetal force, not centrifugal, centripetal, we got to use the right terms here, would actually be enough acceleration to function as gravity. The one theorized in Larry Niven's book had a radius of about 1 astronomical unit, or the radius of the Earth's orbit, and a width of about almost 1 million miles. And it had walls all around the edge. They were 1,000 miles tall. And it spun, let's see, what was the spin velocity? 770 miles per second was the spin velocity. It actually created a gravity of about 1 Earth gravity. And created a surface area 3 million times the surface area of the Earth. Theoretically, if you build this structure, you could have tons of energy and tons of places for people to live.
If you shrink a little bit, there's like an Elysium. They sort of had a concept. I don't know exactly the stats of how big it was, but it was like some number of dozen miles across where all the rich people on Earth would go up to live and, you know, go away from like the wasteland that is future Earth.
Like Wall-E.
Exactly. So there's also a very...
Halo.
There's also a relevant measure of an alien civilization's sort of scale that we should be talking about, the Kardashev scale. It was devised by this Soviet-era Russian astronomer. Basically, there's three levels. So if you're a 1 on the Kardashev scale, you basically run your entire planet. You're extracting all the energy from your planet. If you're a 2, it's that blown up to a star system. So that's like a Dyson Sphere. A type 2 civilization would have a Dyson Sphere, by definition. And then a type 3 civilization is one that basically just runs the whole galaxy. And is, so we know for a fact there is no type 3 civilization in our galaxy, right? Because we would have seen them. They would be running the show. But there could be a type 2 civilization that we haven't detected. There could definitely be type 1 civilizations. We're about a 0.73. Just for reference.
Now, the big question, Henry, here is, could we detect a civilization that has a 2 on the Kardashev scale?
Could we? So, shameless plug for my research. So I wrote a paper on this sort of topic. Basically, if you had a partial Dyson Sphere orbiting around another star, you could distinguish it from an exoplanet, so you could detect them. Although, an issue arises that in order for you to be able to detect it, you'd have to see a transit, right? You'd have to see it pass in front of the star, and that would mean it would have to be very closely aligned with your plane. So only about 1 in 10,000 star systems are inclined that way so that we can see a transit. But like I mentioned, there's 400 billion stars. So we should be able to detect a Type 2 civilization.
Sounds great. Yeah. Can't wait till we do, if we do. It would be scary though. It's kind of hard to think too, like a pure Dyson sphere would probably be pretty hard if it encapsulated the entirety of the sun.
Mm-hmm. It might just look like nothing. Or there might be infrared radiation.
That's true. That's maybe. True. I think it's time we pause and take a quick old reality check.
So,
working on a theme song for the reality check, but we gotta consider reality when we talk about such theoretical concepts.
Mm-hmm. So, a common criticism when you're talking about Dyson spheres, when you're talking about ring worlds, is that it would be crazy unstable.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah. It would be basically... Well, first, and even beyond that, so if you were to try to create a Dyson sphere, there's simply not enough material in the asteroid belt, if that's the material you wanted to use,
yeah.
to construct a full Dyson sphere. It's just not possible.
Theoretically, you'd probably have to have some form of transmutation to build it. And that also come down to what material you build it out of. Would it mm-hmm. be strong enough to take an asteroid impact or comet impact?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? This is all...
Most likely it would not be.
All speculation. But yeah, if you actually created a ring, it would be crazy unstable, probably break apart very quickly, wouldn't be so pleasant to live on. But from the theoretical standpoint, artificial gravity, yeah, you could harness a lot of energy. So, but there's a very, not very realistic, there is a more realistic...
More tangible
side of megastructures that we can... think about ourselves today here on Earth, and that's a space elevator. So it's the idea that you could basically create a cable and a climber that could go all the way up to space. You could load it with cargo. People have said that if you could build a space elevator, which of course the upfront cost is trillions of dollars, but if you could do it, it would lower the cost of space 90-95%, and whoever would be the first ones to build it would control space, essentially.
But are they viable is the question it comes down to, because a structure of that size would most definitely, well, not even just getting the resources for it, but even just it existing is going to provide some complications for life on Earth.
Definitely. And in terms of the construction, there's a concept in civil engineering called the taper ratio, which is basically, so you create this massive structure going right up into space, and how much wider does the bottom of it have to be than the top of it such that it's stable, right? Because if it's the same width the whole way down, it won't be structurally sound, it'll break apart immediately. And at orbital radius, like hundreds of kilometers up into space, for something like steel, the taper ratio is on the order of 10 to the 33. So that would mean if the top is 1 meter, the bottom is wider than the observable universe. So steel is not something you would want to build a space elevator out of. In fact, almost all the materials we can think of that we can readily create on Earth, Kevlar, other things that we think of as super strong and have a lot of integrity, would not work. With the possible exception of carbon fiber nanotubes, the taper ratio is about 1.66 for them. So that's really easy to think about. I mean, 1 meter at the top, 1.66 on the bottom. The only problem is that the longest string of carbon fiber nanotubes we've ever been able to make is about 500 millimeters. And we're talking about making something that it has a thickness too, right? We're talking about making something hundreds of kilometers, perhaps thousands of kilometers tall. So it's not really viable right now.
Yeah, not completely right now, but I imagine we'll be building a space elevator long before humanity ever thinks about a Dyson sphere.
Definitely. And on top of that, we could build a space elevator on the moon using more conventional materials like Kevlar relatively easily compared to Earth. You know, we could do that long before we create a space elevator on Earth.
So they have about a bunch more. We'll just talk about some more things that humanity could build that would help us out in our expansion into space. Two of them come to mind are easily a starport and a moon base. So what advantages would a moon base provide to humanity?
A moon base would be amazing if we create a moon base. Basically, one of the biggest problems we have with going to places like Mars, going to further reaches of the solar system, is that it takes a ridiculous amount of fuel, and therefore money, to get out of Earth's gravitational well, to get out of Earth orbit. So if we had a base on the moon, and we were generating rocket fuel, if we were creating the ship on the moon, then you would never have to leave Earth's orbit. And 1/6 gravity on the moon, it would be a lot easier to get people, materials to places like Mars, further reaches of the solar system.
Easily, yeah. A space base on the moon will provide a nice little medium between leaving the Earth and then getting other places. You could refuel on the moon. You could gather new resources from the moon. Another one that comes into importance is the idea of a starport, which would be more of an orbital structure, kind of like like the space station, but larger. It functions more as an orbital system for constructing spaceships of a much grander scale than we could build on Earth. And also, again, just like a moon base, refueling and then moving on.
Yeah, it's super easy to build stuff in space. It's obviously super easy to move stuff around in microgravity. On top of that, there's a concept called cold welding, which is basically the idea that if you have two metals, and if they're clean enough on both ends, you can literally just touch them together and they'll weld immediately. They'll stick to each other, and then there will be, there's no way for the atoms to know that they're in a different metal, right? That's what Richard Feynman said. So you don't need to heat anything like you have to do on Earth. You don't need to get this layer of oxide off of it. So you could theoretically create a massive station out of metal by just drifting pieces of, yeah.
All right, so I think it's time we take some questions from the live studio audience. Are there any?
We can edit this out if there's no questions, so it's fine.
My question is regarding can we hear more? I would like to hear more about the fusion of metals together. Like, how was that proven to be a possibility?
That's a great story. So it's actually proven to be a possibility the first time anyone ever attempted a spacewalk. I forget his name, but there was a Soviet astronaut on the first ever spacewalk. The Soviets, the propaganda machine, said it was a great success, but in reality, there was a huge failure with the hatch on the spaceship. Basically, when they closed the hatch, it cold welded shut. So he survived, but he had to manipulate it. He had to spend a great deal of time trying to break the hatch open, because the doors had cold welded. And later they realized that that is what happened. They didn't know what happened at first, but it was later proven that that was the case.
So the first thing you can't fix with duct tape.
Yes.
I mean, you can prevent it with duct tape if you put duct tape between the metals.
Yeah.
Duct tape still always wins.
And also on things like the International Space Station, cold welding is largely seen as a concern because they're afraid that two metals will accidentally weld together. But what they do to prevent that is they don't build their materials on Earth in a clean room. Basically, they expose it to oxygen, it creates a layer of oxide, and because there's that layer, even in space, the metals, because there's that small layer, they won't weld. But if you built it in a clean room, you didn't expose it to oxygen, it gets into space, it would be really easy to put something together.
Are there any further questions from the live studio audience?
Yeah, I got one over here. So the notion of a space elevator here on Earth has been tossed around, especially when carbon nanotubes became pretty popular for lightweight, strong construction. To the best of my knowledge, most people still shut down this idea of a space elevator being built from Earth's ground level, but if we were to have a moon base with that microgravity, would it be a much more reasonable task to take on?
Definitely. We were talking about taper ratios earlier, how wide something has to be at the top of a structure, or at the bottom of a structure, such that the top is structurally sound. And you could theoretically, on the moon, create a space elevator out of things like Kevlar, where the taper ratio on the moon is like 2.5. And that's pretty convenient to work with. Like you were mentioning, like on Earth, it would be super, super infeasible. Gravity is like way too strong. But on the moon, on Mars, on an asteroid particularly, there's some asteroids that they spin so quickly, the centripetal, centrifugal force, whatever, is such that you wouldn't even need to build a space elevator. Like literally standing on the surface, you would already leave the orbit of the asteroid, which would be pretty funny. So,
roller coaster,
basically.
No, yeah, certainly so. It would be easier to build a space elevator on the moon. The only problem making a space elevator on the moon, of course, would be getting the material there. But I think that
also,
it's not as big of a comparison to the challenge of making one on the Earth.
Definitely. Also, there's another one of the big problems with a space elevator beyond the construction is powering the climber itself. So most people say that you would have like some sort of power plant at the base, and then you would laser up power. And the problem with that on Earth is that the atmosphere would quickly dilute the strength of the laser. But if you did that on the moon, the strength of the laser would decrease far less because there's no atmosphere. So it would be easier to construct, it would be easier to power. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Anything else?
A bit of clarification. So when you say space elevator, do you mean like an elevator that connects to two, like a planet and the moon, or do you mean something different? Because that's why I've been assuming you meant, but that doesn't seem to make sense.
No. They would not be connected. That'd be, they would snap.
Yeah, that'd be super unstable.
Essentially, it just would lift an object from the surface of whatever body you're on to above, where you could break from the orbit a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. And also, if you build it long enough, you get to a certain point where the centrifugal, centripetal force, whatever, of the Earth spinning holds it with tension. So then you wouldn't even really need to hold it up anymore because it would be holding itself up. But to get to that point, you'd have to build a cable thousands, I think it's tens of thousands of kilometers long. So, yeah, it'd be very difficult to do.
So y'all seen Interstellar?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know the part in the movie where they launch themselves with the force of gravity from a planet back to Earth?
Mm-hmm.
So here's my idea for a mode of interstellar transit, right? You got a space train, but it never stops. It just keeps going around Earth and another foreign body using the force of gravity to launch itself repeatedly, ricocheting back and forth. And then, from Earth, you send up little, and it's also entirely magnets. It's like the whole thing is magnets, right? So from Earth, you send up like magnetized spaceships. So they go and they magnetize to the train, the space train, while it's shooting between planets, right? You'll latch on, and then there are also electromagnets, so they can demagnetize and propel themselves off by switching the poles once they get on top of the planet they're trying to go to. Ideas, thoughts?
I like your usage of the word
Next
space
question.
Train. You mentioned or alluded to the concept of a gravity assist, which is a very real thing that most spacecraft bound for the outer solar system do. Both Voyager probes, for example, did it. The New Horizon mission, which went to Pluto, did it.
But see, the problem with all those is that they came back down. The idea with the space train is it never stops. It's just 24/7, just planetary ricocheting.
Any other questions?
Are you sure you want to see Amtrak expand into space?
Absolutely.
What happens if it's delayed?
Acela. You want Acela in space.
Bro, Acela's actually one of their better lines.
Yeah.
Anything else? Anthony, any questions?
I think I'm good. Great podcast, guys.
Now, he wants to know how many episodes we're going to make per week.
Two or three, maybe.
Yeah.
Is this the last episode?
This is the last.
Yes, this is the last attempt at episode one. Want to give some background into what it, Caitlin did, what it took to make this episode?
Sure. Yeah. So first time we recorded a nice 55-minute episode in this lounge. It was great. A lot of fun. And then I zoomed in on one of the waveforms on GarageBand before having saved it while recording, and my computer crashed, and it deleted itself. We lost the entire recording. So that was a shame.
Yeah, so then a few days later, we said, all right, round two. What's the worst gonna happen? And we came in, we recorded again, and both tracks recorded under the same audio track, and one was way quieter than the other. We still have it, but it just sounds terrible.
It's basically just my mic. So, like, you can hear him talking, but he's like, it sounds like he's whispering or something.
It sounds like I'm in the live studio audience.
Yeah. And this time, hopefully it worked. It looks like it's working.
Yeah.
Do you see the bouncy things? Because that means it's working.
Yes.
This is round three of episode one. Hopefully it's the only round three of any episode we'll ever have.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess it's time to start getting to our closing remarks. We are very happy you came along for the ride.
Realistically, no one's listening at this point, so we can just say whatever. But thank you for
time for an unpopular opinion. Elon Musk isn't that cool.
We can edit that one out. you don't want that out there.
I do not want that out there. Elon Musk is very cool.
I love you, Elon Musk.
We love you, Elon Musk.
The live audio studio says that they love Elon Musk.
Please hire me. You can pay me literally no money. I will sleep on the factory floor of SpaceX in Hawthorne, California. If you just let me, like, get you coffee.
Elon Musk, if you want to do space mining, I'm the rock guy. Come on.
All right. I guess that brings us to the end of this podcast.
So we're posting this on Spotify. Probably we can get it onto iTunes, I bet, too.
Definitely a SoundCloud, maybe.
Yeah, make sure to give us a subscribe. Leave us a 5-star rating if you enjoyed. If you didn't, you didn't make it this far in the episode if you didn't like it.
Thank you to the live studio audience for joining us tonight.
We'd love to have you guys back sometime.
Great turnout.
If you ever think of any questions throughout the week there about anything, forget it.